Very interesting book that I got involved in over the weekend. It's called Deep Collusion by Athol Williams-Bain and the Capture of South Africa. Just to give you a bit of history, Athol Williams is a business strategy advisor, an ethics scholar, and an award-winning author of 17 books. And Williams is the founder of the Institute of Social and Corporate Ethics and co-founder of Read to Rise, an NGO that promotes youth literacy. Having a look at this book, and it's divided into a number of parts. The first part, part A, B, C, and D, and I'm going to allow Athol to tell the story about this particular book. Athol, a very good morning to you, and welcome to Cape Talk.
Good morning to you, Zane.
The one thing that struck me about this book, besides, you know, the facts and the figures and everything else that is in this particular book, Athol, is that it actually reads very, very easy. It actually, you know, gives you such a wonderful insight and perspective into what happened at SARS and the entire story in terms of Bain. You left the country a few weeks ago, isn't it? About 2 weeks ago.
That's right, on the 1st of November, yeah, for my safety.
Yeah. Chat to us about the first part of this particular book, which says, you know, the SARS crisis and your involvement and, you know, investigations with no finding and, you know, running towards the fire, which is what you talk about is about the fact that when you walk past somebody's yard and you see a child drowning, your first impact basically would be to actually go out there and try to save the child's life. So you talk about running towards the fire instead of running away from the fire, isn't it?
That's right, Zane. So to your comment earlier about the book reading, the way it read, I wanted to write the book not as a textbook with just a whole bunch of facts, or as a sort of quite a bland way an investigative journalist might write it. I wanted to make it accessible to South Africans, to a broader audience, because all the facts are there in my testimony and my affidavit to the Zondo Commission. So if people want all the detailed facts, there's 700 pages of them. What I want to do with the book was to add nuances, introduce some of the emails, the discussions, to make it more of a flow of a story, to help people understand exactly what happened behind the scenes of state capture. Not so much the execution of it, but the planning that went behind the scenes. And I think that's what, for me, is scary about what happened and what this book tries to highlight, is that Bain is different to the other organizations who we know about in state capture. Many of the others were involved in the execution phase of the looting and circumventing procurement processes. Bain did that as well, but they were the only management consulting firm who sat down with our president, Jacob Zuma, and plotted and planned some of these things in.
Talk to us about this plotting and planning, because Tom Mayani, according to what you write in the book, Tom Mayani was sort of groomed long before he was actually appointed. Now, this is a scary thought, because if the attack was on SARS and Baines was the management consultancy to SARS, even before that, knew that Tom Mayani was going to be appointed, you know, how far were they prepared to go, and why did they actually refuse to come clean with this?
Yeah, I think that's exactly the right question. The way I understand from the evidence that I received is that SARS was one of the projects, one of the many projects that were planned. It's the one that I think went its furthest to conclusion. And so we saw the impacts. But many of the other plans, Zane, we haven't seen full implementation. And maybe we haven't seen full implementation yet. They might still be in process. So we just don't know what has happened to those plans. I think it's important to note that, like I said earlier, this book is built on my testimony to the Zondo Commission, but all this evidence I got, the hundreds and hundreds of documents and emails that I got, was in my role at Bain. They hired me to oversee their investigation. After the Nugent Commission broke the story that Bain was involved in the collapse of SARS, Bain then asked me to oversee this supposedly independent investigation. So that's how I got access to all these documents. It's only when I discovered that Bain was not the victim sheep in this story, they were actually one of the wolves in the story, that I then decided to go public with this. And that's when I began to look at this materials and see, as you say, that over a year before Tom Mayani was appointed as the commissioner of SARS, He was already planning with Bain what he was going to do when he got there. Now, Tomoyani knew way beforehand that he was going to be appointed as Commissioner of SARS because Zuma told him, right? And Moyani admits this. So Zuma told him, Tom, before this process even is concluded of recruiting the commissioner, you're going to be the head of SARS. Prepare yourself. Bain, Zuma, Moyani, many others sat together up to 18 times planning a whole number of ways to restructure our economy. And so Bain developed this plan with SARS with Top Moyani. It included, by the way, Zane, information that came from inside SARS at the time, right? Mm-hmm. So there was information from SARS coming to Moyani outside of SARS and Bain outside of SARS, which some say, you know, is problematic in and of itself. But they were already planning what they were going to do before they even got to SARS.
Mm. And one of the chapters that you actually chat about in your book is Jacob Zuma and his cronies. And it is far-reaching if we look at it. And, you know, you and I probably, or most of us, go on with our jobs and we pay our taxes to SARS and we do what is necessary, you know, in terms of our taxes and things like that. But this revelation as to what was going on at SARS under Jacob Zuma and the rest of the team, how wide-ranging was this, and how close were we before, you know, the blowing of the whistle on this? How far were we to getting SARS to collapse?
Now, I think what was planned with Zuma, Bain and others, if fully implemented, would dwarf the state capture we've seen, right? We talk about, you know, looted numbers of up to R1 trillion or a few hundred billion rand. I think if fully implemented, Zane, this would have dwarfed what we've already seen. Because some of the plans talked about restructuring and repurposing the entire energy sector, right? There's a plan to repurpose the energy sector. There's a plan called Project Phoenix to collapse the whole ICT sector, which includes telecom, SABC, the post office. And we've got to ask a question why the post office is in there, Centech, many other companies, to collapse them all into one company that will be controlled centrally. The whole theme through all of the plans developed between Bain and Zuma was this idea of concentrating resources, bringing things under control, central control. Now, if you intend on looting, right, it's much harder work to go around to different companies, different government departments to loot, right? If it's all centralized and controlled centrally, how much easier isn't it then to loot? I mean, I shudder at the thought of that with the plans that were actually constructed.
And you talk about the fact that, you know, by the middle of 2019, you write in your book in chapter 5, I would face such a scenario, one I likened to a fire that was causing untold damage rather than a child drowning in a pond. And the Bain business was being damaged by the fire of its involvement at SARS. But much more importantly, SARS, the institution, and South Africa more broadly were also being burnt by the outcomes of Bain's actions. So you talk about the fact that you wrestled with this question, whether you should walk past the fire or whether you should actually run towards the fire. What made you decide? Where in this particular space in 2019 did you say, no, I will rather run towards the fire?
Yeah, it was a wrestling, to be honest, because everyone I spoke to, my advisors, my friends, my associates, most of them said, Athol, stay away from Bain. This stuff is messy. You don't want to go near it. And already I'd written a report to the Nugent Commission, you know, in late 2018 already, raising major concerns about Bain. So I wasn't blind to what was going on. But as you say, Zane, the Bain business was burning and it was a place everyone was running away from, and rightly so. But I felt that I could actually make a bigger difference. I could actually help Bain do the right thing. Now, I drew comfort from Bain's senior leadership, including their global leadership, telling me directly that Bain were committed to doing the right thing in South Africa. Now, that turns out to not have been true. But at the time, I was assured of that. So for me, it was me running towards this fire, running towards this company that no one wants to touch. But I will go in there because I believed I could help them do the right thing in our country, and therefore for the benefit of SARS, benefit for our country more broadly.
You talk about a grand plan on page 124, you know, taken all together, the apparent grand plan that would end up facilitating state capture entailed 8 steps organized in 3 different stages. Where was this plan organized and how was this plan organized and by whom?
So the way I describe it, that plan is never written down in the way I've written it down in that chapter. That plan I synthesize from all the other plans I've seen. So there were 11 documents I had access to that were plans developed between Bain, Zuma and others. And when you look at those plans, they all seem to follow a recipe. And the recipe is restructure the whole sector, then restructure the entities within the sector, and then put in your own people to then lead those sectors or those organizations, which of course will then facilitate control and then looting. So I surmise, I synthesize those plans. I'm sorry, that grand plan from the many other plans I saw. And those were the plans that were developed in Jacob Zuma's office at his residence after hours behind closed doors. Now think about that, Zane. We've got our president sitting down with an American company led by an Italian discussing the most innermost plans of both the ANC manifesto, which the ANC should be accountable for and explain why they had foreigners helping them with their manifesto. But more importantly, talking about the structure of our state institutions, talking about how the cabinet might work, talking about how they were going to circumvent ministerial oversight by developing things like a special delivery agency. These were the plans that were developed between Zuma and Bain, and that's what I synthesize into that grand plan.
Yeah, it's scary stuff, Ethel.
Very scary stuff.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, a number of people, if they'd read this particular book, they would have changed their minds about, the local government elections. Because, you know, installing the CEO and CFO at Eskom and Transnet facilitated the later looting of funds in Step 8 and was reported widely in the media, as you write here. Even the alleged corrupt activity of the company Bosasa, headed by Gavin Watson, operated, at Step 6 and Level 8. What scares me about all of this is that, this was actually going on in the country, and it wasn't something that was just fell out of somewhere. This was actually planned. This was thought through, wasn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I've got documents that go back to 2012 when these meetings were first being had and these plans were first being developed. And I think, I mean, your description of it being scary is absolutely right. What scares me is that the plans are still around, even if they haven't been fully implemented, and the people are still around, right? This is the scary thing for me. We often talk about state capture as something in the past, and we think because Zuma is no longer president, state capture has ended. Absolutely not. These people are still around, and these plans are still around, and we should be very worried about what's happening in the background, because all of these things happen in the background.
In the chapter, which is chapter 13, Bain and Zuma's cronies, and this morning we are chatting to Ethel Williams on his new book, Deep Collusion. And as I said, you know, for me, I feared that the book would be sort of very statistical, and you know, it would be very bogged down with detail, but it was actually an incredibly easy read, and it was a very lovely read to actually to follow. In chapter 13, you talk about August 2019, John Senior, the new head of Bain in South Africa, wrote to the Bain leaders and say, "I fear we can be found guilty by association."
Yeah, it's almost like he's suddenly awoken to this fact. Right. When he looked at the facts. So just one step before that, the head of South Africa at Bain was Vittorio Massone, who was the one at the Nugent Commission. And he fled the country rather than honor a subpoena to appear before the Nugent Commission a second time. Bain then replaced him with John Senior, a British guy who came over. And Senior writes that email almost sort of shocked, because he'd seen all the evidence, or seen some of the evidence and some of the arguments, and suddenly he woke up to the fact that, you know, Bain actually was part of the Zuma camp, and so would be guilty by association. I would argue the guilt went beyond association, because actually it was, you know, collaboration with what was going on. But this is the thing as well, right? We seem to say, oh, okay, well, Masone is gone, so it's new leadership at Bain in South Africa, so the slate's wiped clean. That's nonsense. Most of the people who worked with Masone are still at Bain, either in South Africa or elsewhere. Or they've left Bain, but they're still in South Africa carrying different business cards. So they're all around. Plus, we fool ourselves if we think it was only Bain South Africa involved here. This was Bain all the way up the chain, as I show in the book. People all the way up the chain in Bain to Global who endorsed the contracts, who supported Masone. So it's association, yes, but I think it's actual active participation in the programs as well.
Chatting this morning, and it's a scary, scary book to read in some places. Athol Williams chatting to us this morning about his new book entitled Bain and the Capture of South Africa. Deep Collusion is the title of this particular book. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can chat to us on 0214460567 if you have any questions for Athol, or if you would like to send us a voice note or a WhatsApp, it's on 0725671567. A WhatsApp message coming in, Athol. There have been no consequences for Bain in the United States of America, where the company is controlled by a prominent politician. Will there be consequences? And it comes from Ian.
I'd love there to be consequences. I think Bain has a right to defend itself, right? As a company, it has a right to defend itself, but I think it's got no right to cause the social and economic damage it has caused in South Africa without any consequences. So I'm hoping after the Zondo Commission, there will be prosecutions that follow and that Bain will be included in that. As for the U.S., I mean, there are processes in place. I mean, I've been contacted. I've had multiple discussions with the FBI. So there are investigations going on. It just seems to be very slow.
Mm. Your last chapter, Whistleblower and the State Capture Witness, your very first introduction there, you say Bain tries to block your testimony. How hard did they try to block that testimony at the Zondo Commission?
Gosh, I mean, they tried everything. You know, I understood, Zane, early on that there was no way Bain wanted this testimony to be made public, right? Because my entire testimony, as I've said twice already, relied entirely on Bain's documents. It's their documents. So they first tried, they wrote a long document to the Zondo Commission telling Judge Zondo that I was a liar. They tried to discredit me by saying I've got no integrity, I'm a liar, I've got a bone to pick with them, I'm unreliable, I don't understand things. An enormous document, you know, which for me as a professional and having been a senior partner at Bain was devastating to read. But that was their first attempt to basically tell Zondo, don't listen to this guy, he's just lying, which of course is preposterous because it's their documents I'm presenting. But then secondly, they tried to then get my affidavit redacted, to have half of the actual affidavit deleted and have half of my annexures not presented. And so I'm thankful for, you know, the Zondo Commission for declining those requests. I mean, I put in submissions as well, arguing that, you know, these were not lies. These were all dependent and relied on Bain's documents. And thankfully, the commission, you know, saw the merit of what I was saying and then allowed everything to be included.
Mm. In the last part of your book, you say, your acknowledgement, you say, I dedicate this book to the South African Revenue Service as the public institution most directly affected by the activities discussed in this book, especially those staff members who resisted the onslaught of state capture at great personal and professional cost. And you also dedicate this book to the honest people of South Africa for whom I spoke up at the state capture as a whistleblower. How are you finding yourself at the moment in an undisclosed, after, I think after the attempt on the life, not attempt on the life, the fatal attempt on the life of another whistleblower, you know, you find yourself in what one could probably call an exile. You find yourself outside. How are you coping at the moment, and what are your fears at the moment?
Zane, it's been very difficult. It's been difficult all the way through this process, right? What I try to capture in the book is to show how I had to wrestle with Bain. It wasn't that I was just going along and agreeing with them or that I was just disagreeing with them. I would keep trying to wrestle with them to get them to do the right thing. I keep replying to their emails. I keep sending them messages saying, guys, we must do the right thing here for the good of South Africa. And I kept telling them that my interest was South Africa first, then myself, then Bain. And they agreed to that. They told me to do the right thing without restriction in my contract. So there was this constant wrestling. And even after I blew the whistle, I still continued to write to Bain to say, make full disclosure, right? Do make amends in South Africa, and then we can move on. And all the time, they were trying to either offer me money to be quiet or other incentives to be quiet or making legal threats to get me to be quiet. So I always knew there was going to be efforts to try and keep me quiet. How far they would go, I would never know. And it wasn't just Bain, right? I implicated 39 parties in my testimony. So any one of those 39 parties or their followers or crazy supporters could have wanted to keep me silent. And so that's been a difficult process. It's a difficult process right now for me because now having – oh, sorry.
No, I was just wondering, Athol, and we're chatting this morning to Athol Williams, of course, who is a business strategy advisor and ethics scholar and award-winning author of 17 books. This is probably at number 18, Deep Collusion, Bain and the Capture of South Africa by Athol Williams, which is absolutely worth a read. Did the death of Babita Deokaran scare you?
Oh, absolutely. It shocked me because that was my worst fear come true. Amongst us whistleblowers, we often talked about the risk of being fatally harmed, and it was sort of theoretical. When it happened to her, it became real.
Mm. Where to for you now?
Well, I keep saying I'm not silent. I've left the country to avoid being silenced, but my commitment to South Africa is unchanged, and my commitment to resisting state capture and corruption is unchanged. So I will keep writing, keep speaking, keep being an advocate for an ethical society in South Africa. And I hope one day there'll be enough protection for people like me so that I can return.
Yeah. When I read this book, I thought to myself that this is exactly where we go wrong, because somebody said, I was chatting this weekend and I said to somebody, please do not park in a disabled bay. There's nothing wrong with you. You don't have a sticker. You don't have anything. And I think the bottom line here, Athol, is that if we don't speak up in terms of whether it's racism, whether it is parking in a disabled bay, whether it is this kind of state capture and what you've presented to both the Nugent Commission as well as to, you know, the State Capture Commission is the fact that you've actually presented facts, you presented documents. This is not wild speculation about things. And once you get to that particular point whereby you actually realize, you know, we need to do the right thing. We need to lead SA by doing the right thing every time and all the time. We've got a voice note coming up for just on 29 minutes to 12 o'clock, and it's the last half an hour of the show, 0214-460-567, and on the WhatsApp line at 0725671567. Athol, welcome back to the show. I thought we'd keep you on for a little bit longer because I've got a voice note in from Mary Jean, and here's that voice note.
Hi, this is for Athol. Thank you so much for your input, Athol, for the book, for your bravery, and it's so important that people open up their eyes and know the facts. Thank you.
And this is the key, Athol, because when we started chatting about a number of things about this book, for instance, it took me back to a period of time whereby we didn't document a lot of things during the apartheid era, and therefore we cannot write in certain parts of the history of this country within that particular period. And you've come out and documented a lot of these things happening, or a lot of the things that actually happened. It makes me sit and ask myself the question, what is my civic duty? So what is your message to each and every South African out there this morning?
Zane, you know, you've touched on it, and Mary Jane has touched on it with her voice note. It is that we as individual citizens bear a responsibility to build an ethical society. It's true. Our government has a role. Companies have a role. NGOs have a role. They all have a role to play. But it's us as individuals. We've got to exercise our citizenship and our agency to do the right thing. Firstly, as you say, for example, talk about someone parking the wrong bay, but also to hold others accountable. If I work at a company who's involved in corruption, I should be speaking up. If I, you know, work in government, I should be speaking up when I see corruption. So my message is, you know, at the Zonda Commission, I talked about the era of the brave. We need brave citizens to say, this is my country. It is being stolen from us. I'm not going to allow that. So I will speak up and I will act up against corruption.
Ethel, thank you so much for your chat this morning, and thank you for writing this particular book and dedicating it to every single honest South African out there. I feel sometimes with the corruption that's happening around us, we feel that we're just being swallowed and we are in a sea that, you know, we can't do anything about it. And for you speaking out and pointing out a number of things in this book called Deep Collusion, I think it just makes a person, you know that there is hope that somewhere along the line, someone in an organization will speak up and do the right thing. Ethel, be safe and take care of yourself. And hopefully one day we'll have you back in the studio for a chat.
Thank you, Zane.
That's Ethel Williams chatting to us about his new book entitled Deep Collusion.